some of us will never hear. Anyways, I'm Forrest McDonald. My predecessors here have welcomed you, which I do, and have got straight down to business of introducing people. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make a few remarks myself first. And I will begin in a most unlikely place. On the second floor men's room of Ten Hoor Hall, the University of Alabama, where the history department is located, not in the restroom, it's located in Ten Hoor. We encountered a new piece of graffiti the other day. Some smart-ass kid, no doubt student, had written on the wall, "Historians are doomed forever to repeat themselves." Whereupon somebody else, presumably one of my colleagues, wrote next to it, "We are not, we are not, we are not." Well, I think that you have seen already today, and I'm confident you will see again this afternoon, proof that we are not, at least not necessarily. And in addition to that, comment has been made by several speakers of the trends in historical writing and the fashions in historical writing and the political correctness that comes and goes in like a kaleidoscope and so on, following the election returns, following the latest fads, etc. But despite that fact, there has been, as Charles Kessler said at lunch, a tremendous accumulation of knowledge about the American founding, about the American past in general. And I assume this is also true of European history, but I'm not qualified to say. And the reason for it is, and the reason that the changes, the cumulative process is taking place, will be exemplified by these three people here, because they're all three driven not by a cause that they want to advance or an agenda that they want to promote, but by the scholarly ideal. Now, the scholarly ideal, which you may or may not be familiar with, holds that the true scholar seeks to know for the sake of knowing, right? No more than that. But the true scholar also writes up what he learns, writes up what he knows, and gradually, inch by inch, step by step, little grain of truth by little grain of truth, it's available to all of us to know and understand more. There is a different way of putting that. Being a scholar, being a historical scholar anyway, is really self-indulgent. I mean, it is one of the most selfish undertakings there is. You do it for fun. You do it because you enjoy it. You do it because you get your jollies that way. At the expense of offending some of you, it's a form of intellectual masturbation, right? But it carries with it the obligation to write it up. Now, writing it up is not the fun part. The fun part is finding it out. Writing is hard, right? Writing is not fun. Having written is fun. Having published is fun. But writing itself is sheer hell, right? But you're obliged to do it because you can play your little game. You can satisfy your own curiosity only because people before you have amassed the sources, have recorded things, and made sources available to you, right? You think in American history of a fellow named Jared Sparks, writing back in the early 19th century, who gathered all kinds of stuff, right? He was getting his jollies, but he was making the materials available. Or you think of other historians in the late 19th century and archivists in the 20th century who have gathered the materials and made them available to you. You can't pay them back, right? They're dead and gone. But you're under obligation to pay them back in a different sense of doing the same thing for oncoming generations. And I'm going to add one brief further thing. When I was young in the game, younger than these people are, I was very, very fortunately blessed by being taken under the wing of a lot of very big name, important, extremely good American historians. I think of Roy Franklin Nichols, for example, who was a political historian at the University of Pennsylvania. He was ungodly kind to me, unnecessarily kind to me, and there was a whole host of people who did the same. Now, I address this particularly to the members of the panel. I can't repay them. They're dead and gone. But I can and do whenever I can pay them back by doing the same thing to younger historians, right? And so you're under obligation, all three of you. Anyway, our first speaker today is Daniel Dreisbach. And I am, thanks to my son-in-law over there, John Thune, able to read because my glasses broke this morning and he fixed them. Dan Dreisbach is an assistant professor at the School of Public Affairs at American University in Washington, D.C. He got his Ph.D. at Oxford in 1985. And then he came back and he spent 3 years studying to get a Juris Doctor degree from the University of Virginia in 1988. He has clerked for a circuit court judge for the United States Fourth Court of Appeals and practiced law and all kinds of other things. In addition to that, he's published a number of articles and two major books. He's the author of Religion and Politics in the Early Republic, Jasper Adams and the Church-State Debate, published by Kentucky in 1996, and Real Threat and Mere Shadow, Religious Liberty and the First Amendment, and, as I say, a number of articles. His subject is the Jeffersonian, or is it Jefferson's, revisal. I think I know what he's going to say, more or less, but I'm not sure. Dan?